Cropod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for everybody. I'm just secondhand news. I'm just secondhand news. It's secondhand news on the Cropod, Thursday, the 19th of October. It's a late night edition for me. Pretty early for you guys, but sometimes I get one of these ideas that, you know, just pop into my head. I feel compelled. Yeah, well, kind of like the idea is to launch a scarf from the Cropod with our friends the Famous, which you can go find on the Buy Me a Coffee link down there on this episode that you're listening to right now. Or check out support.thecopelandroad.org. Fantastic scarf. Thank you again, Graham. Of course, our friends over there are the Famous. Check them out, thefamousheadwear.co.uk. And if you didn't also get the memo in either of yesterday's episodes, because all I've done for the past day is sit in this chair and talk to other people to record shows, either for the Cropod or for our friends. But we're giving away something else this month, not just the regular stuff from the Famous, not just the stuff that we've already given away from them, but our good friends at Blue Room Art. They've given us a beautiful canvas of Irox there that we're also going to be giving away to supporters of the show. Thank you to all of our friends. Of course, please go check them out, blueroomart.co.uk. They're signed on here for a few months anyway. So give them support. Tell them we sent you. Follow them. Give them help. I mean, they got nice stuff, just like all of our other friends do. This is not what I'm here to talk to you guys about. This is my brain sitting here on a Wednesday night in beautiful Rockford, Illinois. It's not sat here thinking about scarves and canvases and other such items. No. Know that this is about, well, one of the more prominent stories of this international break. A man, you know, caught up in his own unfortunate circumstances, as it may be. Of course, Sandro Tonali there at Newcastle, who, yeah, I don't know, maybe his agent's right. Maybe he is a gambling addict. Maybe he has a lot of other issues. Yeah, I mean, him and his fellow squad member there drafting the national side and on the back of the revelation of, well, I always love Italian police getting involved in stuff like this. But, you know, of course, I mean, it's a big deal. You're talking about a guy who was, what, a 55 million pound, 60 million pound transfer in the summer to the sport washing Newcastle United side. Thankfully, I'm going to give Newcastle credit on this one. And anyhow, because if you're a club wrapped in that kind of money, knowing where that came from, how you got it, how you got here, fuck it, right? He's not out of the squad. The Italian national team can, you know, try to pretend like we're not going to think about every stereotype in the world when it comes to gambling. But God bless them for just saying, he's subject to investigation. He's fully cooperative. Him and his family, you know, we're here to support. And, now we're not going to talk about it anymore. I mean, it's a reliable statement. It's one of those ones when you know, again, this is me, years in journalism, you know there's somebody in the offices in the front of that club that has direct control over what the fuck is going on. And if it was any other player in that club, I guarantee you they would make almost the exact same statement every single time. I think the difference might be the person's name. Not something you could potentially say for Rangers. But, you know, we covered plenty of that in yesterday's Don't Ask Me No Questions. So we're going to set that one aside. I bring this up, well, in the context of something I'm very familiar with. Growing up and throughout my career, And it's something that, you know, I've had listeners recently ask me, you know, would you mind talking a little bit more about baseball? What, you know, whether they're baseball fans or they find, well, some of the context that the sport can provide to our own, interesting. And baseball, well, baseball in this case has it in spades. So, quick break. I come back and we're going to talk about something called Rule 21. Rule 21. So, quick break. Right back for more secondhand news here on the Crow.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Secondhand news back here on the Crow Pod. And a late night edition for me, early morning edition for our friends over there for the 19th of October. And I'm not gonna, boy, we're not gonna run down everything we did there at the front. You guys know the damn web addresses, everything. Scroll down, help us out. That's it. There you go. Rule 21. I think there's some preface to this. I think there is. So don't go Googling it yet. All right, because I'm going to get to it. But Major League Baseball, well, like any other professional sports league right now, I would say, most clubs, ours included, I mean, Christ, we can't wear our own shirt in Europe because of rules that UEFA pretends it cares about when it's convenient for them to, for some kind of PR standpoint, and ignores completely, you know, when it's convenient for them making money. But when it comes to gambling in sport, baseball has a rather unique history in this regard. Obviously, you know, for me, David and Todd, the great John Mahoney of Frasier fame, but also of Eight Men Out fame. And for those who don't know, in 1919, the Chicago White Sox ball club, who had quite handily won the 1917 World Series just 2 years earlier, lost to a bad Cincinnati Reds team, because obviously they'd won the National League pennant that year, but the three best teams in baseball were in the American League. And the White Sox, out of them, of course, won the pennant and were heavily, heavily favored to win the World Series. And they did not. And they did not in such a fashion that, well, it drew interest of reporters, drew interest of people in the legal profession, drew interest of a judge who would become the first commissioner of baseball, the Neil Doncaster of baseball, if you will, except, you know, with credibility and accountability and, just the ability. Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis, and we're not going to get into the background of his name and, well, you know, America, but the long and short is that the 1919 Chicago White Sox, who fans at least vaguely familiar with the sport would know better as the Black Sox, threw the World Series at the behest of gamblers. Eight players were identified, among them, of course, Joe Jackson, who, man, I'm going to feel bad for this. I'm pretty sure still has the second, well, not still, nobody's even come closer. The second highest career batting average of all time. Hit well during the series. Made some plays that, again, you know, caused concern amongst the journalists in attendance. But also was, well, functionally illiterate. I mean, he was a Southern boy who knew how to hit, catch, and throw a baseball. So, of course, there's always been questions about his complicity in the eight men of the Chicago Black Sox, who were ultimately banned from competitive baseball, professional organized baseball. And this does not mean Major League Baseball, you know, the highest level of the sport. This was organized baseball under any umbrella that wanted to be recognized by the people who actually fucking matter in the sport. Which again brings us back to the problem of UEFA having issues around gambling when themselves, the leagues that they manage, organize, the clubs that partake in those leagues are more than happy to accept money from gambling. And we can turn back further. I want, you know, this idea just popped in my head. I was sitting here at a pizza. We watched the Hulu film that was kind of a allegory with alien abductions and stuff. Not bad. I mean, I fell asleep and woke up and caught the end of it. I don't know. Seemed okay. But this idea popped in my head. Because, again, being somebody who worked in baseball, being somebody who, well, knows and cares about baseball, but somebody who worked in baseball, not only for minor league clubs, but also as a journalist, this is a familiar idea. And when it popped into my head, Rule 21, and we're going to get to here. But the first thing that I thought of, there's a book over on my bookshelf that is the Official Encyclopedia of Baseball Jubilee Edition from 1951. And for some reason, at some point, many, many years ago, judging by what this note card looks like, there was a thing sticking out the side that says, quote, 1876, first gambling bans. And this deals with the early National League. Of course, the National League still, well, one of the two major leagues, although they are all just Major League Baseball now. They're not separate beings. But I'm just going to go in here. This is on page 387, if you've got your copy there with you, of the 1951 Official Encyclopedia of Baseball. Struck by the great number of telegrams received daily by Louisville substitute player Al Nichols, Vice President Charles E. Chase asked him for a written authorization to open all his wires. Since he was one of the players suspected of dealing with gamblers, Nichols refused. But by the way, the Louisville team would be, continuity would be the Pittsburgh Pirates of current Major League Baseball. Chase says, quote, your refusal is an admission of guilt, he insisted. That means you're barred for life. All right then, muttered Nichols, open them. Damaging evidence was brought to light. Several of the Louisville players have been taking bribes from Eastern gamblers, telegraphing the code word SASH for games that they agreed to. Look at that crossover content. Telegraphing the code word SASH for games that they agreed to throw. Faced with the wires, the evidence, of course, George Hall and Jim Devlin confessed, implicating Nichols and Bill Craver. Devlin had been the team's star pitcher, and Jim Devlin was this time one of the star pitchers in baseball, but it's still a 1876. It's still got to be an underhitting error, maybe even thrown from 50 feet. I can't remember. Anyway, outfielder Hall, George Hall, was the team captain and the league's first home run king with five for the 1876 season. Again, the first season of the National League, the successor of the National Association. Charles Chase, the vice president of the Louisville club, he suspended the four players for life. Done. Suspended. And while this was not a rule in Major League Baseball at the time, and we're getting there, seeing as, well, just like almost any of us, maybe it's more insular now owing to the nature of ownership groups throughout professional sports, but this was very much an old boys club. And when Louisville made this decision, all the other owners were happy to stand it up. Continuing here from 1951, though Devlin was a personal friend of Chase's and of league president William Hulbert, the then Chicago White Stockings, now the Cubs. President Hulbert sustained the decision, and none of the four ever played professional baseball again. Devlin visited every annual league meeting thereafter, humbly repenting and begging for reinstatement. It never was granted, and ironically ended his days enforcing law and order as a member of the Philadelphia City Police. But Jesus Christ, I mean, if that's not history repeating itself. Now, this was a problem directly for the Louisville club. Well, I mean, obviously a problem for baseball as a whole at this point. I mean, you're talking about the nascent days of Major League Baseball. Professional baseball is an organized, ongoing. This is the problem with allowing gambling around your sport, right? This is not WWE, which I still find absolutely fucking crazy that people gamble on that shit. But, it's noted here, again, further down in the 1951 official Encyclopedia of Baseball, though expulsion of the cricket players ensured the league of a stronger footing in the country's estimation, again, reassuring people that this is not a cricket game, but just cricket players, it caused several immediate headaches. Bereft of its star players, Louisville dropped out of the league. So did St. Louis, which had negotiated for the ill-fared four to join them the following season. So, again, St. Louis Ball Club, I'm thinking, hi, Scotty, and a few of my other regular followers. You're always shit heels, just so you know. You know better than the Yankees. So the St. Louis Club, knowing, right, so this is the thing, the St. Louis Club, and this is kind of, well, you know, this comes back to the problem right now. It's not a problem until everybody else knows. You know, it's like, well, Barton with us, and God knows what the extent of that shit was with that fucker. But, you know, here we are now with, Tenali here. We know what we know because the police have informed the IFF. They've informed Newcastle, blah, blah, blah. This is what the sporting bodies and the people involved have let us know, right? The St. Louis Ball Club knew when they offered these four players contracts who'd suddenly been released by the Louisville club, why they had been released, right? The idea of gaining advantage in sport regardless of why, regardless of whether or not your PR team can spin it on a moral high ground. This is nothing new, obviously. And again, it's something that football is having to deal with right now, because when you're this fucking far in bed with gambling and these kind of stories break, obvious questions get asked. Does it defend Tenali? No. Does it raise a question about the position of gambling in football writ large? Absolutely. St. Louis had secretly negotiated for the ill-fated four to join them the following season until the gambling scandal broke. And, of course, the Hartford, Connecticut club, like many other Hartford professional sports teams, gave up. That's just a side note here. So, 1876. All right, literally the first year of what we consider Major League Baseball, right? The National League in its existent form, the Major League Baseball in its current form considers 1876 the first season of their existence. And one of their clubs was so mired in a gambling scandal, sent four of their teams, banned four of their players, setting a precedent for the sport, that they couldn't compete the following season. And not only could they not compete, but another club in the same league in its goddamn inaugural season, knowing that these guys had gambled, tried to sign them and could not compete in the following season. This is the first year of what Major League Baseball considers organized professional baseball, right? There were other leagues before this. There was the National Association, and we're going to touch on a little bit of that here right at the end. Year one, 1876. 1919, the White Sox throw the World Series. And baseball came up with a response. And it is, I think, the only response. It may be heavy-handed. It might be unfair at times. But it was, and I do say was, until very recently, a committed, consistent response to the influence of gambling in baseball. Something that every league in the world should have aspired to. And something that now, sadly, with the advent of whether it's fantasy sports or in-game betting or God knows what else, well, I mean, it's opened up these kinds of situations. So we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about what Major League Baseball did. And the thing I saw upon entering the clubhouse of every minor league and Major League Baseball team that I've ever walked into, still to this day, hanging on the wall. So we're going to come right back, a little bit more secondhand news.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it, with Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socha's tragic illness made us smile. While Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile. We're talking softball, from Maine to San Diego. Talking softball, Mattingly and Canseco. Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, the last bit here, secondhand news on the Crow Pod. Again, for the 19th of October here, nice early Thursday edition for me. And one more time, honestly, just to thank him enough, please, thefamousheadwear.co.uk, blueroomart.co.uk, go check them out, give them a hand. I love being able to give stuff away to the supporters here on the show from them. But, you know, it's nice for them when we actually go, you know, buy stuff from them too, because they both of our good friends there, fantastic stuff. So please go check them out. Every single clubhouse, every single locker room throughout professional baseball at any level has one familiar landmark. And I don't care if you've been a journalist covering short season single A ball in fucking South Carolina or walk through the doors of the locker room at Yankee Stadium during the postseason. If you've been inside one of these spaces, you've seen this poster. Laminated now, stuck on the door, stuck on the bulletin board, right inside. Maybe rather conspicuous near the food table. And it's called Rule 21. And it's broken into 7 sections. And only one of those has subsections of its own. Rule 21, Section D. The header simply is gambling. And as I said, you could not miss it. Two players and managers, I can quote this, still in my head. Two players and managers, this is professional baseball Rule 21 regarding gambling, etc. Right? It's under a section, Rule 21 involves misconduct. Some of the other ones are gift for defeating a competing club, I think. Gifts to umpires, makes sense. Stuff about violence on the park. I think the last section simply says, you know, rule to be kept posted in English and Spanish in every clubhouse. But part D, gambling. You know, we're just going to read this thing. Again, I want you to remember, this is all an offshoot of Kennesaw Mountain Landis's edict banning the 8 members of the 1919 White Sox who threw the World Series, banning them in 1921, and ended up becoming Rule 21. That is just so ubiquitous with the sport. You cannot avoid this. If you have ever set foot in a Major League clubhouse, you have seen this poster. I don't care if you went in there on a tour one time. I guarantee there are listeners right now who have at some point come over here or live here, whatever, gone on a tour of a major league ball club or a minor league ball club that they got to know and love and have seen this poster and are right now thinking, that's what that fucking thing was. Part one, any player, umpire, or club or league official or employee who shall bet any sum whatsoever upon any baseball game in connection with which the bettor has no duty to perform, shall be declared ineligible for 1 year. Part two, any player, umpire, or club or league official or employee who shall bet any sum whatsoever upon any baseball game in connection with which the bettor has a duty to perform shall be declared permanently ineligible. Banned. Done. Joe Jackson, Pete Rose, done. Part three, any player, umpire, club, or league official or employee who places bets with illegal bookmakers or agents for illegal bookmakers shall be subject to such penalty as the commissioner deems appropriate in light of the facts and circumstances of the conduct. Any player, umpire, or club or league official or employee who operates or works for an illegal bookmaking business shall be subject to a minimum of a 1 year suspension by the commissioner. For the purposes of this provision, an illegal bookmaker is an individual who accepts, places, or handles wagers on sporting events from members of the public as part of a gaming operation that is unlawful in the jurisdiction in which the bets are accepted. This right here. Right here at the end. First two parts, easily applied. Any sport, anywhere. This part right here is football's problem. Because, you think I gambled in the United States, in Illinois, in the United States prior to the last couple of years? Fuck no. But how easy was it to hop on the internet and find a damn bookie somewhere in Eastern Europe, Singapore, wherever the hell it may be? And not like 1919, where bookies had to travel from Boston to go talk to White Sox players in Cincinnati or Chicago. No. How easy is the access to them? Again, I am not by any stretch defending Tenali. I think very much the first rule or the first part of this definitely applied to him. He should be ineligible for a year. And if it's found that he was gambling at all, and it seems like he was, on AC Milan matches while employed by the club, done. Absolutely done. Without question. But that does not excuse the role of football and the organizers of the sport who have allowed gambling in. And I know that there are people who are going to want to talk about alcohol. Alcohol in sports, whatever else. Fine. That's fine. But that's a straw man argument right now. I'm not saying alcohol cannot influence what happens on the park. Obviously it can. If a player has a drinking problem, if a player is drunk when he shows up, if a player can't show up to training, clearly an issue. This is easily addressed. Very easily addressed. Whatever the hell the money is worth cannot be worth the reputation to the sport. And I know what will happen. Major League Baseball, of course, banned Pete Rose, right? And there's two clear distinctions here, and I want to make them plainly obvious to people who might not, be familiar. Major League Baseball banned Pete Rose from professional organized baseball. The Hall of Fame had already subsequently made a rule, right? The Major League Baseball, the Baseball Hall of Fame, Cooperstown, New York, had already made a rule following on 1919 that anybody banned by a professional baseball league would not be eligible for the Hall of Fame. And it's not just the 8 Black Sox players who ended up getting banned. One of the funniest things of all that shit is Hal Chase, who was a first baseman for the Cincinnati Reds, for the New York Giants. Probably the most corrupt fucking baseball player in the history of the game. Never got banned. But a couple dozen other guys did. Some would try to go to Mexico and play under assumed names until they got found out. They wouldn't have him down there. Because again, it's an old boys club, right? And once you cross that line, you cross the line for all of them. It's going to be the problem, I believe, for Tenali. For anybody in this kind of situation. Because, well, it's something that people are paying attention to more. Obviously, to go back toward the beginning there, we had our issue with Joey Barton. Well, we had a lot of issues with Joey Barton. But there was an issue around this. And there were a lot of questions left unanswered, I think. And certainly he's never going to. I wouldn't count on him to. How the fuck this guy is somehow in charge. I mean, it just speaks volumes to the, ineptitude. And, nobody cares until they have to care. Right? Joey Barton should be nowhere near the management side, coaching side, whatever, football club. And Sandro Tenali right now is probably going to pay the price. Well, in much the same way, the Rose thing, again, it's weird and it's different because of the issues with the Hall of Fame, right? Which is a separate entity from Major League Baseball, from professional baseball itself. They have their own guidelines, have their own rules. But this is going to keep happening. I mean, obviously, goddamn. How many, you see these stories pop up every once in a while that, like, a tennis match between the 438th ranked player and the 679th ranked player in the world playing in, like, Zagreb on a Tuesday morning at fucking 7 o'clock suddenly had millions of dollars on the betting line. The leagues were all in bed with them. And for what? Easy paychecks. Right? Because they know just as well as us, like, gambling's going to happen regardless. I mean, that's why Rule 21 specifically lays out illegal gamblers. Baseball now skirts this rule quite handily in meetings every single spring with their players. Joe Panik, the second baseman, I believe for the Giants. I just found the quote, and I can't remember all the content, but that's, every year there's meetings during spring training where representatives from the league come in, representatives from the players' union come in, talk to the players about this kind of stuff. Now, this is Panik talking about this a few years ago. This had to be right around 2019, I want to say. He said they led with that, Rule 21. They led with that. Quote, when they lead with that, they know that's what people will pay attention to. They always go over Rule 21. This time they talked a little bit more about gambling and pay attention to people you deal with and outside influences. They're not outside influences when they're inside the fucking organization of the sport. And that is the problem that leagues are going to have to deal with right now. You cannot as a governing body tolerate and accept the money from gambling institutions and turn around and do, again, I'm sure it's going to happen to Tenali. I'm sure he will get banned for some period of time. And God bless Newcastle again. When your money came about that way, fuck it. And fuck everybody. We're going to fucking play him until you tell us that we can't. I hope they do it. I hope they do. Because sitting him is not going to alleviate them. They're not going to get pinched on this, right? And they're going to ban him either way. But they're going to have to all sit around together and think about how they're going to handle it so as to shift blame or any kind of, well, review of the role of gambling and betting in the bodies charged with governing the sport. And again, our club is not immune from this. Our shirt sponsor, I found the problem from day one. I do not like it. And that's, you know, that's a determination for the club and the people running it. Obviously, our CEO is not above getting involved with scammy-ass fucking Turkish money laundering schemes. So having Unibet on the front of the shirt maybe is a little bit better. And again, if you want to talk to me about alcohol, that's fine. But alcohol in this context is a fucking straw man. You can make all the same arguments, make all the same points that I just discussed there. Of course, alcohol can affect the outcome of a competition. But that's the, it can. Can. Gambling. Betting. Directly. And football has things to answer to. I'm not the only one. This isn't the first time I've said this shit. This ain't going to be the last time I say it. But for some reason tonight, Rule 21 popped into my head in terms of how the response should be taken. Major League Baseball has lost its way. And at some point, it will come back to fuck them. Because as with any other issue like this, when you open the door, eventually somebody's going to walk through it. Now, if that's Tenali, we'll find out. If it's his teammate, we'll find out. If it's somebody else right now, we'll find out. If it's somebody fucking 8 years ago, but that's the thing. We'll find out. And at that point, instead of running away from the problems, the people in football should actually address them. Won't. I mean, Christ, you know, there's a dollar amount on buying the World Cup. I mean, we know this won't be dealt with in a proactive stance. And, you know, again, it takes these kind of investigations, these kind of things, and we're going to sit down and have a conversation on a boardroom level and make a decision in the best interest of the organization or the club or whatever, fucking whatever. So having the goddamn rule on the wall that very clearly spells it out. If you are caught, this is what will happen. And the only way you can do that is if you are not already in bed with the fucking gamblers in the first place. You know, a light note here, just to wrap this up. Because, again, amongst the other things, in the 1951 Official Encyclopedia of Baseball Jubilee Edition, few people do know. The National Association, as I said, the predecessor to the National League, which we were discussing earlier, which, obviously, Major League Baseball is still ongoing. But my town here of Rockford had a club in the original National Association, the Forest Cities of Rockford. They included, if I remember right, I think four Hall of Fame ballplayers. But in 1871, their only season in the National Association proper, I want to say they played like the loosely affiliated 1870 season also, but 1871, their only season proper, played a massive part in deciding the first league champion of what would become the National League. Of course, right now competing between the Philadelphia Phillies, we're about to get to here in a second, and the Arizona Diamondbacks, who not only have won a World Series, but played in other ones, while my Seattle Mariners still haven't been to one. But owing to the Chicago Fire of 1871, the Rockford Ball Club, the Four Cities of Rockford, of course, you had, Cap Anson, played 27 years, I think still, pretty sure it's still the all-time record for, you know, Major League seasons. Again, amongst, pretty sure there are four Hall of Famers, but I'm not going to go look at this right now. They were supposed to go play the Chicago White Stockings, who would become, of course, the Chicago Cubs. In the second week of October in 1871. Little problem is that while they were on their way to Chicago, they noticed the whole city was fucking burning down. And so, I want to say it was a two-game series, because I lost my page here in the book. I've written about this before, but obviously it slipped my mind. The White Stockings, again, now the Cubs, owing to the burned-out state of the city, didn't play the Forest Cities. Rockford, the ball club, returned home, only played a handful more games and folded before the 1872 season, ending my city's turn as a top-flight professional sports outfit. The Chicago club, though, would have to go on the road to play their final few games. Lost them, and still looked like they had won the pennant. Still looked like they had won the league championship. Despite awful end of the season, not being able to complete their full slate of games, which back then, obviously very common. Something, you know, people on the other side of town might know something about winning a league without actually finishing out your fixture list. And they'd won the league. Problem was, benefit to any Philadelphia Phillies fans listening right now, is again the predecessor to the National League's Philadelphia Phillies, Philadelphia National Association Ball Club, had played a pair of games against the Rockford, for the Forest City Club of Rockford, the Forest Cities, who had to forfeit for fielding an ineligible player. thereby handing the Philadelphia Ball Club the first league championship of the National Association, the predecessor to today's National Leagues, and therefore Major League Baseball. So, there's a little bit of Rockford at the end to wrap this all back up. And that will do it for Second Hand News here on Thursday. I'm probably not going to come back and do one tomorrow, because honestly, I'm not kidding. We did the Big Crow Pod Wednesday because it got bumped from Tuesday owing to our new manager meeting the media. I did Wrong Term Memory. My good friends Jack and Colin over there, you can go find that on their network. I think many of you do. If not, of course, via Patreon, or you can find them on Twitter, Wrong Term Memory. And me and my friend DJ Danny there, we came back late on Wednesday to do a little bit of Don't Ask Me No Questions, a show that, you know, we'd started autumn of last year, but obviously, like everything else with the Crow Pod, kind of got put mothballed, towed away in a box for a little while, but it's back. And me and him talked, unlike the regular Crow Pod, we actually talked about Rangers for about 45 minutes. So you can find all that wherever you get your podcasts, or I guess in Wrong Term Memory's case, Patreon for now, but I think they come out other places later. And again, don't forget, Crow Scarf available now. If you are a member of the show, you know, members of, like, if you give me a few bucks every month, support the show because you listen to it, you like me, you like us, you like everything we do, you get a discount on Crow Scarf. Just pay attention. There's one for UK shipping. There's one for international shipping. Now, very clearly labeled, though, but just pick the one that applies to you. Don't make me email you. All right, just sign in. November 5th, we'll have all the pre-orders together. I send them over to Graham. Everybody gets their scarves. Everybody's happy. In between now and then, people win stuff from the famous. People win stuff from Blue Room Art. People go get their bodies rubbed at Recovery and Repair and Massage Therapy in East Kilbride there by our buddy Mark. But that's it. Like I said, Second in News, wrapping it up. Thank you guys again. Thank you so much for all your support, bringing the show back. Hopefully, this appeases some of the people who like baseball shit. But, you know, I cannot stress this enough. It's something that me and Danny talked about on Don't Ask Me No Questions yesterday in regards to Rangers. It's something, I mean, look, this is evergreen. It doesn't matter what the hell your business is. But a lot of the time, it's not what you do, but how you do it. And football, like every other sport, is walking down a very, very dark, dark road right now. That they're relying on the fact that they're paying these men enough money, and ladies, sorry, enough money that they cannot be wooed or influenced by gamblers. But that is a fucking obscene notion on its face, because why the hell would you, Mr. Billionaire, far more money than all your fucking employees, any of the footballers, why the fuck would you get in bed with these people in the first place? Doesn't add up.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah.
You can't even fucking serious at all.